The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we'll be talking with Steve Schmidt. But before we get started with Steve, this from ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anybody else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within, wait for it, 1 day. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. Welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And I was explaining to my pal Steve Schmidt yesterday that we got to really like a guest to bring him back for a second time, but we really like Steve Schmidt. Steve Schmidt not only ran John McCain's presidential campaign and was played by Woody Harrelson in Game Change. If you watch MSNBC on these various shows, no one has spoken with more passion and common sense and anger about what is happening to this country than Steve Schmidt has. And he doesn't do this as a Republican or a Democrat or a conservative or a McCain guy or somebody who ran against Obama. He does it as an American. He does it with a sense of history, because all you have to do is sit down with Steve Schmidt for about 5 minutes in the green room and he'll give you a history lesson on something. He joins us again today. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Great to be with you.
I don't even know where to start, but I guess off the news of the week, we can start with DACA and the Dreamers, Steve, because I was saying to somebody the other day, did you ever see the movie The Verdict with Paul Newman, where he plays a down and out Boston lawyer named Frank Galvin? He's in the movie. Newman is defending a patient at a hospital because of a medical error, is ends up in a vegetative state. And it turns out that the people in charge of the hospital made the admitting nurse, played by Lindsay Krause, lie about when the patient had last been fed. And it ends up with a catastrophic thing. And when she finally admits it on the witness stand, she looks out and she looks at the men, the doctors from the hospital, and in this breaking emotional voice, she says, "Who are these men?" And Steve, I was watching Sessions make that statement yesterday, and I was thinking to myself, what the hell kind of country do we have?
Well, the action is just unbelievably cruel in the anxiety that it will produce, the breach of trust by the government of the United States as an institution. It's a legitimate criticism to say of Barack Obama that he vastly overstepped his executive authority, that this is the province of the United States Congress and the legislative branch to deal with immigration issues. But once the president took his action and it's being adjudicated in the courts, of course, Dreamers have come forward and enrolled with the government, giving their addresses under the belief that they would be safe, that the government had made a commitment. And in this era where trust is so completely collapsed in all of these institutions, I think that the material breach of trust here is overwhelming and frankly more important than the separation of powers argument that's now being made retrospectively by people like Paul Ryan, who on September 1st says this would be a mistake. I disagreed with him. I disagree with the use of that authority. I think it's an overreach, but now that it's in place, essentially leave it in place. And then, of course, he flip-flops and kowtows to the president as the Speaker of the House. He kowtows to the President of the United States, and not for the first or last time this week. And now is supportive of the repeal of the program. And it's just a real unfortunate situation. And Congress here is just compelled to act, and to act in the national interest. You can't have 800,000 people subjected to this, all of their families. You have 100+ thousand of them in the Houston, Dallas metro area, where for months the recovery operations and efforts will be ongoing, will be difficult. What a strain on the community there. And so it's just awful. And again, it's evidence of this president's divisiveness. We have, as a president of the United States, who pits Americans against each other, divides the electorate purposefully to inflame and inspire the most extreme element of his base in this tribal era of American politics.
We're talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubica podcast. Steve, when watching Jeff Sessions the other day, I was thinking that he looks like this sort of benign character, but I believe he's as much of an immigrant hater as the president of the United States is.
Yeah, I think that Jeff Sessions, you know, view on immigration could properly be described as nativist. He's longtime anti-immigration, but the issue here, of course, and we can't forget what this is about. Through no fault of their own, these children were brought to the United States, by their parents, who were looking for a better life, looking for economic opportunity. They entered the country illegally, and they've lived in the United States productively. And largely safely and in the open and contributing to the economy. And of course, we'll see the contributions of that illegal labor force or undocumented labor force in Houston over the course of the recovery. But these kids, some of them having served in the United States military, some of them having been combat veterans, some of them having received valor awards in combat, some of them having made the ultimate sacrifice for the United States. Thousands of them in universities that will become engineers and doctors and teachers and entrepreneurs and renew the lifeblood of the American nation and refresh the American ideal and our principles, as the Irish and the Italians and the Germans and the African Americans and the Hispanics have done before them. And it's a real test here for the Republican Party, who politically should understand that this remains, despite Trump's victory, the fastest growing demographic in the United States. George Bush got over 40% of the Hispanic vote in 2004. Ronald Reagan used to get over 40% of the Hispanic vote. Both of those men had affinity for the culture and the people, and understood the long historic ties between the United States and Mexico, and understood the vital contributions these communities make to the United States.
Isn't this one of those moments, and they seem to come more frequently now, Steve? I said yesterday on a Morning Joe that this is the first, and I'm not trivializing storms, believe me, knowing what we've had and what's coming, but this is a Category 5 presidency. Now, sometimes it subsides to a 4 or a 3, but we live in a constant state of storm threat. And it is why the country is not just the divisions of the country have it on edge, but this president keeps people on edge. And wasn't this another example with DACA, Steve, where he clearly did not have a grasp of the issues, and was why he was obviously gobstruck by the reaction to what he and his attorney general did?
There's just no evidence to indicate that he's prepared on any particular issue. across the board. That's been true since the campaign. The Donald Trump we saw in the campaign is exactly the Donald Trump we have as president. And look, you look at his behavior, the most powerful office in the world, commander-in-chief of the most powerful military in the history of the world, commander of the most lethal nuclear arsenal in the history of the world. If a CEO of a publicly traded company, if a commander of a U.S. naval vessel, if the head of a nonprofit or a university comported themselves like Donald Trump does, as irrationally as he does, as divisively as he does, as dishonestly as he does, they would be relieved of their duties. And so all over the world, 200 days into this presidency, after Charlottesville, we now live in a permanent void where the president of the United States has lost his moral authority, both domestically and internationally. And that's uncharted territory for the American president to have to be reprimanded on the danger of Nazis and the evil of Nazism by a German chancellor or a British prime minister. So we do live in extraordinary times, and I think people have a real sense that in this hurricane, that our institutions, the pillars that sustain our republic and our democracy, which is, I think, the obligation of every generation as a trustee, right, to bequeath to the generations of our children, our grandchildren, and people not yet born, a stronger, freer, more prosperous country. And I think people rightly see with this presidency, with the dishonesty, with the assault on some of the pillars, the foundations, right, of the country, whether it be the free press, whether it be the courts, whether it be the right to dissent, to speak out, the right to be able to have a factual debate, an honest debate on the issues, I think people are in a state of anxiety and deep skepticism and distrust, both about the intentions and the basic competencies of this president.
Steve, one of my best friends is Paul Westphal, who was a great player in the NBA, and he was a coach. And one day he called one of his players in, and he said, you know, if you don't start playing harder, I'm going to have to go to the media and tell them about your stomach problem. And the player said, well, I don't have a stomach problem, coach. And Paul said, yeah, you do. No guts. And I look at the Republicans in this Congress, and I know some of them intermittently stand up to this president. But Steve, a lot of them, I think, are afraid of him. And I swear to God, I think a lot of them are afraid that he's going to go after him on Twitter, or he's going to do something to humiliate him. When does this become so unsustainable in the eyes of principled people in the Republican Party in the Congress that they start to speak up more than they have?
Well, I think that Paul Ryan is a great case study here. You have the Speaker of the House, is a constitutional officer, he's third in line to the presidency, and he leads a co-equal branch of government. And you see what happened to him yesterday when Donald Trump sold out his Republican partners and cut a deal with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on raising the debt ceiling, the Harvey funding, that will vastly increase the chances politically of Democrats taking the House because of the fractiousness of the Republican conference and the looming upcoming and many other votes that will occur to raise the debt ceiling, all of them under threat of government shutdowns. And it will drive a chaos narrative and an incompetency narrative, as if it could get any worse, but it can probably marginally by a couple points. Their approval ratings are at 13%. But what we'll see here is again, Paul Ryan basically flip-flop his position, mute his criticisms and not dissent, you know, from the president. And he doesn't seem to understand that the Breitbart wing of the Republican Party that Steve Bannon now on the outside with a vessel to communicate to a potent base that is only about a third of the country, but of course overrepresented in turnout in Republican primaries. He's going to be able to communicate this hardline nationalist message. And he doesn't seek compromise with Paul Ryan and the Republican leadership. He seeks to dominate it. He seeks to impose Bannonism or Trumpism, right, onto the Republican Party, which includes the winking and the nodding to these extremist groups. And at its worst, of course, the president, with his outrageous moral obtusity, talking about the good Nazis amongst us. And so when you look at this Republican Congress, time and time again, the Republican leadership has failed to stand up to Donald Trump when obviously they should. And I think they dishonor their oaths, their obligations to their institution. They're clearly, in some instances, not putting the country first. You have some people like Bob Corker, who tried to accommodate, work with the president, be supportive at the beginning of question his mental fitness. And of course, the Speaker of the House, you know, continues, I think, to believe falsely that what the most important issue in America is tax reform, not necessarily defending the assault on the institutions, against the Trump presidency.
We'll have more with Steve Schmidt, who just makes more sense about America than just about anybody I know, after this from GEICO. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lupica podcast, you know, you look at the numbers and the polling, even on Trump's base, and even they didn't like the decision he made on Dreamers. Steve, who's he talking to these days? What's his long game if he decides to run for re-election, if he makes it through this term? What coalition does he think he can cobble together with an approval rating that'll soon be right around 30%?
Donald Trump ran against a candidate that allowed him to win with approval levels that, you know, heretofore would have simply been disqualifying. And so here's what we know from the 2016 election is fundamentally, if you had a bunch of Republican and Democratic political consultants who've been involved in successful campaigns and you gave truth serum to all of us, and you said, look at the numbers blind of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. You would have said, well, neither one of these people is electable. They can't get elected president of the United States. And so, at the end of the day, the way that an unelectable candidate wins is by running against another unelectable candidate. And nobody should discount the Democratic Party's ability to nominate an unelectable candidate, where you have a choice between Donald Trump and a socialist candidate, essentially, or someone out on the far left wing of the Democratic Party. And should that happen, what Donald Trump would say, I think, and what they would say in their states is that an electoral calculus is they want to maintain their coalition at its core, that coalition is overly represented in some of the states that will be determinative in the outcome of the presidential level, that they know from electoral performance that though there may be deep discomfort with him, Republicans will hold their nose and go with him over someone from the far left of the Democratic Party, that there'll be a tribal aspect of people staying on their side of the line, and that in the end, in a close race, the intensity of the bases is what matters. And this is what has changed fundamentally in American politics. The politics today is a game of inciting the base, the most intense part of the tribe, to take action. It used to be a business of persuasion when you would go out and try to make an argument, usually around a factual recognition of the relevant problems of the day. And both sides would go out and they would say, my idea, our idea is better than the other side's idea. They'd try to get a majority or a plurality of Americans to side with them, really in a commonsensical fashion. When you look at the health care bill, for example, right, they're voting to pass something that has a 13% approval level, but has an overwhelming approval level inside a small faction of the country disproportionately represented with political power now in the country. And so the way we correct that in the United States is through the election process in 2018. But I think that that's part of the dynamic of what's going on.
Steve, do you think he's looking down the road and seeing three candidates in 2020 and that if that happens, he's almost guaranteed of being reelected?
I don't think that he's necessarily guaranteed to be reelected with three candidates. You know, look, there's a fundamental question here about our political system. And you know, you look at the American economy and the pressures that so many Americans are under as we, you know, are in 2017 in the middle of this technological revolution, globalization. You know, where there have certainly been winners and, you know, winners and losers in the country. And most every industry, every sector of the American economy has gone through some level of disruption. And I don't think the political markets are immune to it. And I don't think that a acquiescent, submissive Republican Party that's anti-trade, anti-immigrant, anti-gay, that a coalition of nationalists, right, who wink and nod at white supremacists, and in fact, though they view them maybe with some disdain and don't like their extremist views all the way, will kind of wink and nod and accommodate them as part of the coalition. The Republican Party of yesteryear can't continue to exist, even in a damaged state, in that type of coalition. And neither party has an entitlement to any vote share in the next election. Every candidate starts from zero. So I think a candidate who is an independent candidate, someone of significant stature, who could communicate a vision to America that fundamentally, hey, we're all in it together. The country can't do well if half the country is failing. And that if you love your country, it requires you to love your countrymen. We're not each other's enemies. We may disagree fiercely on political issues, but we're Americans. And the country now is down a road that we have to come back from. We have some real serious issues, $20 trillion of debt. 17th year of war. Before the next presidential election, I think it's almost certain that you'll have the first American soldier, sailor, airman, or Marine killed in action who was born after 9/11, fighting in the wars that came after 9/11 continuously. It's an extraordinary moment in American history. And I think that if a candidate can emerge in the center of the electorate and give people a home to go to offer commonsensical, truthful solutions to the obvious problems that the country has, and who can restore a sense of rectitude and probity and dignity to the office of the presidency, I think it would be good for the country for that person to run. And I think not only could that person win, I think certainly they don't guarantee that Trump wins a second term.
We're talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubega podcast, you know, and we're having this conversation on the eve of another anniversary of September 11th. And I always think about that time in this country, Steve, and the great Pete Hamill once said that we didn't see the greatness of our country on September 11th. We saw it on September 12th. And 13th and 14th as the city and the country were like a great fighter getting to one knee and then slowly getting up. But you know this. We all said the same thing. We're going to be a better and stronger people because of this. We're going to be better. We're going to look at things differently. And now, 16 years later, you look at this country now. And Steve, I never get overly dramatic. I tell them I've got four children. My boys are in their 20s. My daughter just went off to college. And it, just in my lifetime, I've seen Martin Luther King get shot, two Kennedys get shot, a president essentially removed from office because of criminal activity, Vietnam, the war in Iraq, on and on and on, the Clinton scandals. Who knows what kind of shape Reagan was in his second term. So we survived all that. We'll survive this too. But Steve, there's a lousiness in this country now that is becoming prevalent and almost virulent. And I wonder if people could take a breath on Monday, on another anniversary of September 11th. I know it sounds like I'm proselytizing here, and remember the things we said about America 16 years ago this September.
It'd be great. And you hope every American does that on that day every year for as far as we can think into the future. I was so taken, and I think so much of the country was, you know, was part of the reason it went viral is, you know, I guess I'll call it the "My Name is Mattis" speech.
Yeah.
Right. And you saw, you know, I think two things in that conversation he was having. You saw someone who's an authentic leader. That had the absolute respect of those men who looked at him and said, he's one of us. And then you saw, I think, what's increasingly an iconic figure in the country. You know, what once would have been celebrated as virtuous, aspirational behavior, you know, in the sense, you know, a kind of quiet toughness in the sense of Clint Eastwood back in the day and John Wayne, just a cool, calm, strong American leader talking about the importance of just simple virtues like friendliness to one another, talking about how lucky we are to be Americans. The great inheritance that we all have, the fact that everyone born in this country wins the lottery on the day that they're born by virtue of being in a country where anything is possible. And the restriction in the eyes of so many Americans, the fading of the American dream and what type of country we're going to be is going to be a fundamental question that the country has to answer in 2018 and in 2020 in the processes and through the freedoms that our founders gave us and that so many generations of Americans have fought for and died for and marched for.
We're talking to my friend Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lupica podcast. Steve, when you look at this White House, and I know that there's a conga line of people going in and going out, and we know the importance of General Kelly and General Mattis and McMaster. Who is he listening to? Who is it? Could it possibly be Stephen Miller? Is he still listening to Stephen Bannon? Who does he listen to? Or does he make up his own mind that pardoning a career thug like Sheriff Joe Arpaio is a good idea?
I think it's arbitrary. It's capricious. It's sloppy. You know, it's exactly the type of comportment you would expect from a reality TV show star who played a billionaire executive on TV, but has never run anything of any level of sophistication or complication. He ran essentially a small family business. It wasn't a public company. And so his decision-making process right from the beginning of the administration with the travel, with the Muslim ban, with the fight over crowd sizes at the inauguration, has just been marked by an extraordinary intellectual sloppiness in whomever he's listening to. And look at this issue of DACA. Come back to that for a second. is badly out of touch with America. This is a real fundamental question when you think about the Trump presidency, right? It comes down to your view of America, right? What is the beating heart of the country? And where do we see it? And I would argue that the beating heart of the country, you find that in the behavior and the actions of Americans in everyday heroism in places like Houston. The images of African-American teenagers in hoodies rescuing an elderly white woman as her car floats away is certainly saving her life. You look at September 11th, the passengers of Flight United 93, who almost certainly saved the capital of the United States and thousands of lives from destruction. The first casualties of combat in the fight back against Al-Qaeda. American civilians coming together and exact. That's the country. You have to be nuts to think that a majority of Americans want to see 800,000 kids that have been raised as Americans kicked out of the country, and the path of destruction at a human level that would leave, tearing American families apart. Nobody wants to do that in America, except for like a very small extreme fringe. And though Jeff Sessions may be one of them, he's badly out of step with a country that by, you know, a 70, 75, 80%, 85% margin over the course of recent years says we just have to solve this immigration problem with common sense, realistic solutions that both secure the border and deal in a compassionate way with the people who are in the country living their lives as productive Americans.
And on this morning in America, I'm talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubega podcast. On this morning in America, 1 hour ago, the 45th president of the United States, who just sent his attorney general out to knock DACA out of the park, tweets the following, Steve. I don't know if you've seen this yet. For all of those DACA that are concerned about your status during the 6 month period, you have nothing to worry about. No action. Wow, Steve, that ought to make him feel a lot better.
Yeah, it's the introduction of a ticking time bomb into the lives of ordinary people, good people, in every community, in every university in this country, by frankly a privileged man who was able to not course in his hands over the course of his young life. As he strived to access the American dream through hard work. You know, much has been given to Donald Trump, and that's part of this too. It just makes the cruelty of this so much worse.
Steve, you know, one of the things we always talk about, we talk about the base and we talk about what happened in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And you know what makes you heartsick when you look back at how close this election really was? What was it? 60 million eligible voters didn't vote in the last presidential election. I may be off on my math, but it was a hell of a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that has always been true of democracies is the people get the government they deserve. And you know, we're all in it together. And you know, not voting is an act of choice also. You know, it's an exercise to some degree of your First Amendment right not to participate, you know, to be passive. And unfortunately, you know, for people who think that their vote doesn't matter or that they're too busy to go and do it, they're certainly profoundly affected by it. And it does matter. And so by opting out, I think they lose a right to complain and influence American politics. And it's unfortunate because there's so much at stake and there's so many implications for everybody in the country in these elections. And elections have consequences. As we go forward with these investigations and everything else that could come and all the uncertainty that brings, I still believe that the overwhelming likelihood is that for people who believe that, you know, this presidency represents a real crisis for American democracy, for our institutions, you know, for our affinity for each other as a people, that the divisiveness will take time to heal, and it will leave a scar that will be present for a long time. That the next opportunity to begin to deal with that as a country is in the midterm elections, and of course the 2020 elections.
Talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubega podcast. You know, Steve, in my sports writing life, I'm always amused after like the opening day of the baseball season when people will make lasting judgments about what they saw over the first nine innings. So the dumbest parlor game right now is trying to anticipate or to analyze what Robert Mueller is doing or what breadcrumbs he might be leaving along the trail. But this is this is not just a great American. This is a methodical great American. And is there anything that you have seen that has sent off sirens for you that gives you hope that Mueller might really have something on this guy?
Well, look, I'm not privileged, you know, obviously to anything that's going on in the investigation. You know, everything that I know about what's going on in the investigation is what's been reported in the media over time. And, you know, I've had a senior level job on two presidential campaigns. And there weren't any Russians around. And I don't think there are any Russians around on the John Kerry campaign. When I was on the Bush campaign, weren't around on the Clinton campaigns or the Obama campaigns or the Romney campaign. There are no Russians around. And so I know that when all of the officials from the Trump administration have gone out and been asked direct questions about meeting with Russians, dealing with Russians, that the denials have never held up, and that over and over and over again, there are these relationships that have been lied about, these connections that are frankly just shady as hell, that, you know, and particularly given the FBI raid of Paul Manafort's home, you know that there's a Washington, D.C. kind of lobbying component to this as well. You don't know where any of this goes, but you do know that all of the things that the Trump people have said about this, 100% of the time since the first question was asked, have been 100% false.
All right, right.
Every single time. So that leads me to believe that if I was in the Trump White House, that I would be extremely concerned about what's coming down the pike. Because usually the level of dishonesty is commensurate with both the level of wrongdoing and the level of worry about right. being caught for it.
We're talking with Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubega podcast. Much more with Steve after this from Exxon and Mobil Synergy Gasoline. Engineered to provide better gas mileage, lower emissions, and improve engine responsiveness with 7 key ingredients. Stop by your nearest Exxon or Mobil station today to experience Synergy Gasoline. We're talking to Steve Schmidt on the Mike Lubega podcast. When you talk about the falsehood and the fabulism and this, the outright lies, even yesterday on his way to North Dakota, he says, Trump does, that we're the most taxed nation on earth. It's not remotely true, Steve.
It's not remotely true. You know, I also like come from a viewpoint that thinks that tax reform is urgently necessary to grow the American economy, and that levels of taxation in the United States at some individual levels, you know, at small business levels, hamper growth and job creation. And so, but there's a way to have that conversation honestly. But he just has an incapacity, you know, for both nuance and truth and a lack of preparation, you know, to make any type of substantive argument. And you look at the state of division inside that Republican conference. I mean, the notion that they're going to reform the tax code with a 32% approval rating, with these two giant natural disasters coming down upon the country over the course of the fall heading into a midterm election year is just, I think it's a pipe dream.
People have asked me, not that I have any wisdom on this, you know, who's the, you kind of alluded to this before, who's the dream candidate to run against Trump in 2020? And I think it has to be someone from the middle of the country. And I know that sounds crazy to limit it geographically, but I was joking the other day, there's a reason why like the most popular talk show hosts in history have all come from the Midwest. And I just think, is there a Democrat? Is there a relatively young and not crypt keeper old populist Democrat from the middle of the country who can speak to the better ideals that you've spoken about in this conversation?
I guess I would say this. I think that there's going to be an extremely large field of Democrats, and I believe they'll be a credible independent and independent candidacy. If the Democratic Party, you know, for example, moves or continues to move in a leftward direction and, you know, nominates someone from the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, which I think is entirely possible. But broadly speaking, I think that the person who will beat Trump, that would be strongest against Trump, is one thing has always been true in presidential elections, is that the next president always has oppositional virtues from the last president. And that's usually true, not biographically, not by resume, CV necessarily, but by character, right? By their qualities of public virtue. And for sure, I believe this. I think that the presidential candidate who can defeat Donald Trump is going to have the capacity to have love in his or her heart for Trump voters and all their fellow Americans. And that you can't go to Trump voters in this era of incitement with Trumpian tactics that causes them to stay with their tribe as opposed to creating a welcome for them to turn against Donald Trump. And too much of the rhetoric, I think, from the left on the Democratic Party towards Trump voters is that they're dumb, they're deplorable, they're racist. And that cultural condescension that I think largely emanates coastally, that people in the middle of the country feel so viscerally, and I think played a real role in the outcome in a couple of these states in 2016, the candidate is going to have to be able to connect with their real, legitimate issues of concern about the economy. And with that recognition of the legitimacy of the stresses they face economically, in a country where there have been clearly winners and losers, and we've not focused on the people that have been left behind by globalization, that were so deeply impacted by the Great Recession. The way that Ronald Reagan got Jimmy Carter voters across the line in a landslide of change in 1980 wasn't by calling people stupid for voting for the peanut farmer. It was by asking a simple question that created permission to come on over. It was that, are you better off today than you were four years ago?
Right.
The majority of Americans would know. So you're going to have a candidate. The best candidate is one who will offer a vision of the country that is big and bold and magnanimous and filled with the best characteristics of our highest American ideals, in opposition to the divisiveness of Trumpism.
talking to Steve Schmidt. Got a couple more minutes with him. And again, we're having this conversation on the Mike Lupica podcast on the eve of another anniversary of 9/11. And 9/11 didn't just speak to the greatness of New York. It spoke to the greatness of America. And Steve, you know this. When in our worst moments, we find the best in ourselves. Okay. And I know it sounds highfalutin to say that. I hope people will take a moment, just a moment on Monday, or maybe during the reading of the names of the dead, to think about who we're supposed to be as a country. Steve, how much damage has been done to the office of the presidency in just 7 months?
I think very, very significant damage. But our system of government and our country is resilient to challenges, including tragedies much greater. But make no mistake, I think it is a tragedy that we have a president of the United States who possesses no moral authority. And there's never been that type of degradation to the dignity of the office of the president of the United States, even by those who brought indignity to it. And so it's sad to see the presidency so diminished, and to see a president who is so morally obtuse as he was after Charlottesville, and how absurd he was in Houston in the shelters, talking about to everybody have a good time. So there's damage done. That being said, Republicans in recent years have liked to beat Democrats about the head with this attack that Democrats don't believe in American exceptionalism, which no Republican should ever make against a member of the Democratic Party again, frankly. But we're an exceptional country. It's not an entitlement. It's an inheritance. And what makes the country exceptional is that we're the only country in the world made up of all the peoples of the world, where every language of the world is spoken every day. And that country improbably became the wealthiest in the world and has done more good, has fed more people, liberated more people, cured more people than all of the other countries of the world put together since the beginning of time. That's what makes us an exceptional nation. And so that does not become untrue because Donald Trump degrades his presidency. It's the greatness and the strength of the American ideal, ultimately, that confronts Donald Trump and will defeat Trumpism.
That's as good a definition of America as I've ever heard. And as usual with Steve Schmidt, you get a civics lesson in addition to the passion. Watch if you're dial flipping and you see him on MSNBC, you stop and listen to him, because he speaks to our better selves in this country as well as anybody I know who has come out of politics. I thank you so much, my friend, for taking time to do this today.
You bet, Mike. Great to be with you. Thanks.
Steve Schmidt, he has been involved in two presidential campaigns, most notably John McCain's. You see him all the time on MSNBC. I always look forward to when I am lucky enough to be part of his discourse. Again, this is the kind of conversation we have, whether it's about sports or show business or politics or America, every single week. It's why our numbers keep growing. Please download this podcast. Please subscribe to it. Go to the readers' comment sections and leave comments about what you heard and the vision of this country and what sometimes seems like a dark time that Steve Schmidt just laid out. I'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.